Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast hosted by Kendall and Jackie, and here we talk about everything horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, and the tropes. And we have new episodes released Tuesdays bi-weekly.
And follow us on Facebook and Instagram at TerraNova_podcast. But also feel free to reach out through email at terranova.pod@gmail.com. And most importantly, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog too. Cujo.
Hey guys, what's going on? Kendall here. Welcome back to another episode of Terra Nova. Just saying hello, seeing how you all doing before we jump right in. This week there won't be no Jackie, but that's cool. She's coming back. I wasn't here last week, so it happens. So this week we have a guest, a returning guest. At this point, basically family. It's just this year alone. I think it's your third episode. How's it going, Rudy? What's going on?
It's going very well. You know, enjoying the new change to the season. Loving the crispness of the fall approaching and everything else like that. I love the rainy day today as well.
Yeah, I'm a fan of rainy days too. And honestly, the way the summer was going, we had so many rainy days, it was just hot as fuck. So I'm kind of cool with the cooler rainy days. I could take that.
Too much heat this summer.
Yeah, it was killing me. It was kicking my ass. But how's it going, man? What you been up to since you last were on? Last time you were on was Pan's Labyrinth, which was fairly recent. So like, what you been up to since then, or even just in general?
So doing the teaching thing. Watching movies, of course, passing the time, having some fun with going back to work, working with the kids again, and actually prepping for my art show, which is fast approaching, and I'm excited about that.
Can you tell people more about it? What type of art show is it?
It's called Memento Memento, and it's based on the concept of how we document things and why we do them. Through the exploration of sound recording, photography, and visual art. You guys are actually part of it, so I'm excited to have that. I feel like it's very different to have that. And I think it's been really cool, you know, just to like be able to come on here and talk about these things that we love. And it'd be nice to put it out there and expose people to it in a different way. So that's like the big focus right now. I was working on my paintings, prepping my taxidermy for the show as well, and then kind of just getting everybody who's a part of it into it and excited to display what they have to display.
Oh, that's dope, man. I'm not sure if you're actually about to know it here before. I know you, Jackie's mentioned it a little before, some of your taxidermy work, but like, I don't know if you want to talk about that. Like, what is that even like? How does that even work?
Well, taxidermy is a very time-consuming thing. You have to have a lot of patience. I particularly prefer and lean towards insects and bone articulation just because I'm a big fan of little critters and I don't really want to do the skinning or anything like that. So for me, it's more like things that I can just pretty much repose, and that requires like, you know, collecting the bones, cleaning everything off if you want to clean it, gluing it together, creating a habitat for it and making it presentable. With insects is the same thing. Very delicate process. In rehydration, you have to like pretty much take a crispy little body of an insect and make it movable again so you can pose it. And then you put it in a little habitat or a shadow box or a little dome that you want to use for presentation, and then you put it on display or you sell it. I mean, it's very popular, I feel, more recently. A lot of people are very into morbid curiosities and things of that nature, so it does have its nice little following. And I got into it like randomly. Yeah. It was something that I've always, I like this. This is fascinating to me. And I kind of just started taking classes for it here in New York. And I went to like a couple and it kind of just stuck. It's like great. It's easy enough for you to become comfortable with it. And I think the first thing I ever did was a tarantula, which was really cool. Some people are like, start small. You know, I went into something really big and gnarly, and it was pretty cool to like be able to pose it in a way that it looks like it's alive and be able to handle something that people are typically scared of, which I love insects. So that's a plus for me, just to be able to hang out with all the creepy crawlies.
That's a wild. I know nothing about the craft of it, but it clearly seems very like detail oriented, like just the entire process, everything about preserving it. Cause like, how do you, How do they even, actually, this is probably a more specific question. How do they even, like, get the bugs? Like, I know, obviously, you want probably, like, dead ones, right? Or is there some
they're naturally harvested. I always recommend that if, you know, you go out in nature and you find something and it's intact, you can bring it home, clean it up a bit, and then rehydrate it. There's companies that you can buy stuff from. You know, I'm not going to go tell you to go out there and, like, kill little insects or anything like that. But, like, I have a specimen, my specimen of my... a dragonfly, I found that naturally, like, you know, insects, they die, and sometimes in the right atmosphere, they just become, you know, they're preserved on their own.
Yeah.
A lot of it has to do with, like, lack of water, so they remain intact. The only thing I don't like about winged insects is how delicate the wings can be, so I don't really touch butterflies or moths, dragonflies, anything that has, like, very thin features, I really don't touch because it's very delicate, and that requires an extra level of patience that I don't have. So I think I've been more happier just working with, like, beetles and arachnids. I've done two spiders, very different types of bodies, a tarantula and then an orb weaver. Delicate creatures, they do break here and there, but you can always, like, stick them back together, which is the nice part about it. It's like Legos, but with, like, you know, something that was once alive, as morbid as it sounds. But
I get it. I wouldn't even call it morbid. I feel like scientists have to do stuff similar to even study these things, so it makes sense.
It's a cool process for that. Like, there is a layer of, like, you know, like, creepiness and horror and science to it, and I enjoy all those things together, which is, like, why I'm so fascinated by that.
That's dope, man. That's really, really cool. I mean, I know we're covering a movie today that's definitely within that wheelhouse, but I think it's just cool in general because I'm just curious about stuff, so I've never... I don't think I know anyone no one that comes to mind out of all my friends. No one comes to mind. I know off the top of my head that does that. So it's kind of cool to hear about that a little bit. It's super interesting because I know it's usually for, like, visual sake for, like, people, like, preserving it and putting it in, like, you know, in frames and stuff like that so people can see it. And it always looks amazing, but you just go, man, how the hell does someone do this without destroying it? So I think you underestimate your patience.
There's definitely layers to it. I try to not overdo it. There's some people who, like, mix other elements into it. Some people do resin work with what they're preserving. They do, like, collage work with it as well. It's really cool how it's kind of, like, changed that people have taken parts of their own personality and what they're good at to kind of, like, put into the displays or put into what the presentation of their subject is. And it's really cool to see it because it works very, very, like, on many different levels. I've seen people use it for, like, the sake of fashion. They make jewelry. They make, like, decorations with it. It's just cool. I think it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. That's dope, man. That's really, really impressive. Definitely want to hear more about that as we talk, because that's really dope. But today, we hopping into a movie of your choice, The Collection, a 2012 movie, which that feels like a century ago at this point. But 2012, I've always seen the Albert art for this. I mean, sorry, the poster art for this movie. But I've never got a chance to watch it, so I'll just say out the gate, this is my first time watching it. But, like, before we even hop into the summary for it, like, what kind of made you consider this movie? Was it just your use of craft and felt so similar to the dude in the movie? Or what kind of made this your option?
The Collection is a sequel to The Collector. You kind of got to see a little bit about how our killer works and everything else like that. But I remember when they were advertising the second movie, I had seen... Mm-hmm. Like, there was a big thing with that. Like, you can see the use of, like, taxidermy, but it was, like, really, like, fucked up taxidermy. Like, it was, like, bones put together and, like, body parts. And I like that sort of stuff. I like the way that things are presented in that sort of, like, element because, like, oh, I like taxidermy, so let's see what this is about. And I kind of watched the movie already having seen the original first one, and I was still curious about how that world was going to expand. And it drew me to watch it, and I really enjoyed it. It was just something that, like, I think was done in a way where it wasn't, like, for gimmick's sake, but it was part of, like, the character and who he was as well, which I think was really cool, because typically when you think about a killer, you think about, like, you know, oh, criminal. There's specific stereotypes they fall under, but you wouldn't think that it's, like, a professional, you know, entomologist who does insect work and stuff like that. But the Collection was great. I'll jump into the synopsis for it, which is, like, a young girl named Elena ends up going to a party, and things take a really twisted turn. All of a sudden, there's a whole like giant blender coming out of the ceiling, and people are getting chopped up, and she, you know, ends up like dodging all of that. Her friends get killed, but she ends up going into a room and she finds a trunk, which ends up having inside of it our survivor from the first movie, which was a thief by the name of Arkin. He ends up escaping. She gets kidnapped in exchange mm-hmm. for, you know, he goes free, but she gets taken, and she gets taken to the Argento Hotel, which is the base of our killer, and the whole place is booby trapped and rigged. There is some pretty messed up, twisted things that happen in there. People are drugged, they're mutilated and tortured to his sadistic satisfaction. Yeah. And ultimately, Elena's father wants to have her rescued, so they recruit Arkin and a team of like trained, I wouldn't say they were like mercenaries or anything like that, but they were people who had skills who were supposed to be able to get her. And yeah, the movie just goes into a lot of like crazy things, the elements of how, you know, like I really enjoyed how they show you that he had very sadistic methods, but there was also the element of the booby traps and like kind of like the psychological aspect of it behind it as well. Yes, yeah, which is like Saw-ish. One of the things that also drew me to the movie is that it has a lot of Saw elements. I believe they have similar creators, if I'm not mistaken. And originally the idea for the collection and the collector, well, the collector itself was supposed to be like a sequel, if I remember correctly, a prequel. And it was supposed to explain like, what's his name? Jigsaw's origins. Yeah. John Kramer. It kind of took a life of its own, which I think it's cool because that genre specifically, what would we call it? Would I call it survival horror?
Some people call it torture porn, but I guess, yeah, survival. I guess survival is probably the best description because I forget, I'm thinking, what else would I even put in a similar vein in terms of like traps and stuff like that? Of course, Saw, then probably something like Escape Room, where it's like people just trying to like beat the timer or trying to just like survive a situation. So it's not just a killer, there's like also like just the environment being kind of dangerous. Yeah, so I guess survival fits, yeah, survival
as well, fits. But yeah, I think that like that's a great way to open it up because I feel like during that time, during those years, Saw was already taking off, and there were movies that were doing it, but it was like over the top. Like,
yeah,
I like Saw because it's supposed to be like shocking, and you know, like this movie has the shocking moments as well when it came to like mechanisms that were being used, but with the collection, that wasn't really the focus. I think a big thing that they did was more of like the feeling of like the helplessness, and the scenes were gory, but it wasn't like the main focus of what they were trying to make you feel. Like in comparison to Saw, it's like, oh, you want to see the booby trap, I want to see somebody's head get ripped open and stuff like that. It was more gore in Saw than it was with the collector and the collection. But I do like that genre. I like it for the layers that it touches upon. I don't know. It makes you think, like, if I was in that scenario, what would I do? Or, like, would I risk my life for someone else if I had my chance to escape?
I'm going to just say I'm going to die. I ain't going to make it. You put me in any of the traps, I ain't going to make it. I'm going
to
just say
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of us will probably just be too panicked to be able to really think calmly and make a decision that's going to benefit a group of people or even ourselves in the moment. But there's a lot of you know, it was originally advertised as a prequel, but then it was scrapped to be that, and then it took a life of its own, and it has a nice little following, which led to like people creating these ideas that it was like a shared universe and that characters from the Saw series were possibly the our killer in the collection, which they never really show you who it is, which I think was a cool thing. You had to pay attention to certain things when it came to like how the movie was done. They kind of revealed to you why everything happened, like right at the end of the collection when he's listening to the radio and it gets cut off. Like you hear about previous murders, the gallery murders, and it talks about like how the child mm-hmm. in the house was like the one survivor. So you can kind of piece it together, like, oh, this is why this is happening. They don't go into it, but it'd be cool, like, if they want to do, like, a prequel to the collector where that happens. But Yeah, I mean, like, movie-wise, I like that it takes place in a contained space. I feel like I like movies that have, like, really big universes in, like, small places. And I like that it was, like, it was horror. There was some action in it. There was also some mindfuck moments where you're just like, oh, this is crazy. Like, you know, people who have enough Stockholm Syndrome are willing to help their own killer if they think, you know, they're going to appease to them. So, yeah, it's like, you know, like, crazy. How easy can people be broken, not only physically, but mentally?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because that character was pretty wild. I ain't trusted for the moment she came on screen, because whenever somebody's usually watching me horror movies, you know, so whenever somebody's usually unharmed for too long and they like in the evil person's lair, you're like, yeah, this person's sketch as fuck. So that was like my immediate thought from the moment that character came on screen. Yeah, this movie was like, it was interesting. It was, like I said, it was better than I thought it would be, because I've never watched it. I've always just seen the poster, and I remember just thinking, oh, like, The Collector, like, what the fuck is that? Like, you don't know what the like, from the poster you can't even tell what the mask really looks like. You just see somebody lacing up a mask, so that always just like caught my attention, and I was like, what the hell is he? Like, is it creature or some jigsaw thing? Like, I never knew definitively. And especially since the first one, The Collector, has a similar art where it's just him lacing up the mask, I always used to get the two mixed up, and I never even knew that they were two separate movies. I always thought it was just one movie. I didn't know that the first one was called The Collector, then the second one was a collection. I just thought they were both the same movie, and it was just different arts because of how similar the art is on the cover. So that always, like, kind of threw me off. But I was like, oh, one day I'm gonna sit down to watch it. I just wanted the movies. It's so many things to watch, so it didn't come to my mind immediately to watch. I'm so happy you recommended it. But it was a lot better than I expected it to be for what it is. You know, like, I don't know, man. I try to set my expectations for most movies pretty low, because I just want to go in and enjoy it. That's why I don't feel like I ever walk away from any movie like hating it or anything like that. I find something in it I enjoy. With this movie, not knowing that it was a sequel going in, because I watched it on Prime, and then I just noticed, like, in passing, when I was kind of read like a little bit of the summary, it said sequel. I said, sequel? What the fuck? There's more than one? Like, kind of threw me off. And then you also mentioned, I was like, oh shit, it really is more than one. It's just the same art. But watching this, like, having no idea of, like, what this world is, like, I didn't know what the killer does. I didn't know what the killer would, I don't know anything about the killer. I was just like, all right, so I'm assuming he called to collect us, something like that. But that's all I really knew going in. It was, like, interesting. It was a little more interesting than I thought. Like, one thing that caught my attention, of course, the traps, because I'm like, oh, that feels very, like, Saw-ish. Which, granted, Saw isn't, from what I recall, I don't think it's the first killer who really was using traps like that. But, you know, it's the most notable one that comes to mind. So I was kind of like, oh, okay, some Jigsaw type-ish. But then I was noticing he, like, especially in the club scene where, like, everyone was just getting mowed down. I was like, okay, all right, this is, like, Saw-ish, but, like, Jigsaw definitely had a lot more dialogue before he started killing everybody. This dude just murking people. The blade came spinning through the club, killing everyone. And I was just like, damn, bro, we didn't even get much dialogue yet. We just know these characters are going to a party. The girl sees her boyfriend, punches him in the face because he's there with another girl, even though he says he's supposed to be doing something else. And then, like, people just start getting mowed down. So I'm like, damn, it wasn't even like, you know, you used to Saw, the tape comes on, you're like, oh, shit. And then the dude give you a speech about how you ain't been valuing life, and he murdered people. Or, like, he says something. So it was kind of interesting for this kind of movie to see, like, a dude who really ain't got much to tell you. He just here to do whatever shit he trying to do, whether it's chop you up, experiment on your body, whatever he's doing. He ain't really here for the dialogue. He's just here for the action. I was like, that's pretty interesting. And it's a good, I guess, spin for that type of character. Especially with the comparison to Jigsaw, where it's like, I think of Jigsaw, and part of the reason I like the character so much is because of, like, his quote unquote, like, mythology and, like, the lore of the character makes him, like, really appealing. You know, sometimes it doesn't work in horror. Like, you know, there's always the discussion of, like, is a killer still scary if you know a lot about them, or are they still scary once you take the mask off? Like, you know what I mean? So, like, sometimes it works, sometimes it don't, right? Like, I think of Freddy Krueger, when he first, the first one, Nightmare on Elm Street, he wasn't the most talkative. And even in the remake that he did, the first one, he wasn't very talkative. He was very much just like, I'm here to kill you, and it's just going to feel creepy that I'm doing it. Some of the later Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, Freddy gets more talkative and he cracking jokes, which can still be scary, but it to me got, like, slightly less scary because you're kind of like, all right, this dude's just trying to torment me at this point, which works for him. But for me, as a viewer watching, I'm like, this isn't the scariest, but I love these movies, but this isn't the scariest. So it's kind of cool to see a character that, like, returns to that form of, like, I don't really need to say shit much to you. You don't even need to know why you're here. I'm just going to do these things to you. And unless you find a way to prevent it, you asked out. So I really found that pretty interesting. And I just, it was kind of cool that it was like, the movie basically takes place in like a trap house. And like, not trap as in drugs, but like literally a house full of traps. I don't know, that building had to be a few floors, maybe 3-4 floors. But just every room full of traps and weird contraptions where you could, in a way I was questioning, like, how the fuck did this guy build all this shit? Like, this guy got a mastery in engineering and some shit? This is amazing, some of the shit that he built in this house. But I guess it just took his technique of taxidermy to the next level, where he put that level of attention and detail into even everything he touches. So it's kind of interesting, the kind of killer that he is.
I definitely agree with you. I think I really appreciated the lack of explaining why he did what he did. You know, like, I think it was great just establishing that there's like a mass murderer killing people. He always takes one survivor, and no one knows where he's going to strike. So when the movie opens up, it's like the police reports. You hear the news reporter talking about it. You hear the cops and everything else saying, you know, what's going on, and everybody's like on edge. And then it goes into, like you said, it jumps right into it. There is no explanation. There is no talk. You know, like, I think a lot of people get tired of the trope. Oh, here comes the villain. They got to give their little villain speech about why they're doing this and how they were wrong. And it establishes from the get-go that this guy is just like getting his rocks off by doing what he does. Like, this is what he enjoys. This is what he's there for. And I like that they didn't hide him.
Yeah.
Like, I like that, like, he presented himself and he was there to see things happen. Like, that was his thing. Like, I want to see it happen. I want to see people be tortured. I want to be part of it. I want to get my hands dirty. It is very, like, elaborate how he set up certain things. But one thing I really appreciate about it, I like having the mystery to it. Like, we knew there were things that were booby-trapped, but I like that I didn't know what to expect. In difference to Saw, like, they show you the mechanisms, like, oh, if you don't pull the key out of your eyeball, then this is going to happen. It will rip you. Like, we will know. You kind of didn't get the full effect. So with this thing, like, the reason why, I think my favorite one was when, what's her face? I keep forgetting her name. Susie, Debbie, the girl that was already there, the one that was trying to win favor for the collector. Like, I didn't expect for her to step on the nails and for her to just get, like, crushed like that. I was like, oh, that was, like, so out of, like, nowhere. And that was, like, really cool.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't really know where everything was added that extra element of, like, you know, like, here's this, like, what's that going to happen? Like, are they going to step on something? Are they going to trip something? Like, where is it going to come out of? And I think that was cool. I do like the way they go about it, though. Like, when they have franchises like this where they do always keep somebody who kind of bested the killer. And I think that's what got our collector, you know, like, that's why he was able to get beaten, because he became too obsessed with the fact, like, oh, like, someone escaped, or, like, you know, someone learns enough about them where they're like, oh, I figured her shit out. Like, I'm not going to do what you did, but in reverse to stop you. And I like that too. Like, I like that that's kind of like Arkin's redemption story. Like, he was a thief, you know, in the first movie, he breaks into a family house where he was trying to steal, I believe it was jewelry, a diamond or something like that. And when he breaks in, he was already working for the family, and then, like, he goes back thinking that the family's not going to be there anymore, and all of a sudden he realizes that the house is completely booby-trapped. And I like that too, that they never really show you how that happens, or they never explain it to you too. Like, does this person have, is this Bruce Wayne setting up traps and, you know, dressing up as Batman to be the hero? Like, you know, we don't know that. Like, it's just like here is this that's already happened and established. There's that mystery to it. And I always like movies that have that, like, oh, you, the person you don't expect to be the person who's going to turn out to be the best ends up being the best. And, you know, here's this thief who already survived the first time, and then he has to kind of, like, it's kind of forced, he is forced to go back, but he ends up kind of, like, stepping up. Yeah, he definitely steps up after, like, being so hesitant through everything, and it's kind of like, dude, like, I'm the one person that got away and survived. Like, you're going to listen to me or you're not? And then everybody gets pretty much... yeah, they all get murked. So it's like, oh, you guys should have listened to the one guy who kind of, like, you know, was telling you how to get to the place based off of cuts that he had on his arm. And I like that. I kind of like that, like, he had his own, like, way of remembering things, because it kind of established, like, you know, like, what happened to him was like, yo, I'm going to be a victim, but I'm going to be a victim that's going to make it hard for you, because he could have just been like, I'm done, I'm out, not remembered anything. Not plan to ever, like, try to confront him again. But he had that, as hesitant as he was, I think given the chance, and somebody would have been like, look, we're going to go here, we're going to get rid of him, he would have took it if he would have been more willing, if it would have been nicer, I guess, if he would have been asked nicely, he probably would have been like, all right, let's do it. But, yeah, I really like that. I don't know. I think the fact that he was, like, he was afraid, but then he wasn't by the end. Like, he was, like, really upset. And, like, then they get into the whole fight. And he's like, a complete, like, when they fight in the actual abandoned hotel like that, he got really into it. And then the way that it ends, too, you know, like, he's really, like, about it. And he's like, you know, like, you hurt people, so now it's time for you to feel what that was like. And I just like that. I don't know. I like that. Like, the horror movies for me that I really, like, are rewarding to me are the ones where, like, you know, it's a human being. And I think as humans, humanity is always, like, really interested in, like, the atrocities we can commit, because some people can blur that line of, like, what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like, their moral compass, like, it doesn't work, right? So I think this is why movies like this really, like, fascinate us. But then it's, like, it has that duality of, it's, like, oh, there's just really messed up stuff happening. But, like, a person who seems irredeemable because they've either done that or they understand it to a certain level has always been the one who can kind of, like, surpass that and be better than, like, the killer or whatever is the thing causing harm to others. So I like that sort of stuff, just because it kind of, like, it dances on, like, what human psyche is. Like, we're constantly making good and bad decisions, you know, trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong, and trying to balance it in a way where it's like, this is good for me, but will it hurt someone else? I mean, a lot of people live carelessly, but, like, this is why these franchises are very popular. This is what made, like, Saw be so interesting to people. Like, am I living, would I be worth it to get a tape, you know? Like, am I going to get a tape one day because of how shitty my life is, or how shitty I carry myself? And I like that. It was like I said, yeah, they're trapped in the hotel. It's all booby trapped, but we never knew what to expect. And it wasn't like that was the emphasis. It was more about, like, how they were responding to everything and how, like, quick they were to, like, think to avoid whatever the worst case scenario was. I did like that they kind of touched upon, like, his the collector's weirdo obsession about, like, finding the perfect specimen, because, like, that was,
yeah, what's the deal with that?
I guess for anybody who does, generally in taxidermy, you try to find a subject insect, whether it's an insect, an animal, or even the bones you're preserving, you know, for it to be in the most optimal status, to be, like, you know, as intact as possible, as presentable as possible. So I think the fact that he had, like, that really, really, oh, a lot of those things were really disgusting, especially the one with the limbs. It was just like a torso and they had all these limbs coming out of it, and the bones. That is a whole,
yeah,
you know, that was very twisted. That is something that is done, though, just in case you're curious. In the taxidermy world, there are people who create decorative furniture using bones. So they'll take, like, a bunch of animal bones, and they can make you a Christmas tree. It can get very fun and very dark, but, like, that's kind of, like, where that comes from. Oh, wow. It was really interesting to see how it was, because, like, he was still mutilating his subjects. So, like, what was the point of, like, having those people if you were still gonna destroy that perfection you had found? And then you had we had the guy who had, like, he had the bomb, like, cut into his neck, and then he was saying that, like, he didn't make it, and they were, like, really obsessed. Like, he messed with their minds so much, where, like, you're not worthy. Therefore, now I'm going to use you and destroy you this way, because you don't deserve to be in this thing that I'm creating. You know, so it's like, then it makes me question, too, like, to another level where, like, so are the people that he kept, did he torture them enough for them to accept, like, to be willing to be like, okay, you can kill me and I can be part of this? Because those two were very, like, fixated on that. Like, oh, you know, he's not going to take me. If I don't help him, I'm not going to be worthy. So it's like, Why do you want to be a part of that? Like, you're literally gonna get killed and mutilated and get shown off. So like, I don't know. That was a very interesting thing to have and kind of, like, hear and see. I just think it's a fucked up case of Stockholm syndrome. Like, you know, you just want to live so you appease to your kidnapper or your torturer. But, like, those are things that are, I don't know if they've ever happened in the real world to that capacity, but, like, those are things that do happen to people. Their mind deteriorates enough.
Yeah, definitely. Because, yeah, she was basically unharmed despite her being like, quite some time might have passed since she's been there. And she's like, he's testing me. And it's like, well, how many times has he tested you? Because that's Because this girl just seemed to have gotten here. I'm not sure if it's supposed to be all the same night that she was taken, or if this is like a day later or a few days later. But yeah, it makes you wonder how long that girl was there to kind of, I guess, aid him, even though she was also a victim. Very interesting scenario altogether. I wasn't quite sure how to feel about that. I was like, that's weird. Because then you also had people who were kind of like zombified in, like, I guess the basement or something. It was like, I guess they were so hyped up on drugs based on what the people broken who saw it said. It was like, it seemed like they were just so hyped up on drugs that they were like borderline animals. And he was like, yeah, if you stuck somebody with enough of any of this stuff, they would lose their mind and basically be an animal. So I don't know his logic to that. Like, was it that they were just imperfect, so he was like, fuck it, just make them monsters? Or were they just too troublesome to deal with as a whole, and he felt one way or another? I don't know. Did they explain any of his thought process?
It was just behind just something the intro to part two, when they're talking about, like, oh, you know, he keeps on. I think that's also something that's cool that the movie does, where it kind of lets it be open to interpretation. Like, you know, like, I can imagine, all right, so all the people he has there, he's always kept one from the slaughters that he does. Were those people that he collected collectively, and in that collection that he had, he was just picking the ones that were the best, and then the rest of them, he was like, well, you're here already, might as well put you to use. Because to me, yeah, there were a lot of people in that basement, and, like, he really messed them up. Like, I mean, it was so sadistic that he, like, cut their tongues off so they wouldn't be able to speak or be understood, and then he shot them up with hallucinogens, which I can imagine was what he used, and then just set them free. Like, imagine being starved, cold, naked, and just, like, being put in a basement and not knowing whether you're gonna live or die. And then, you know, out of survival, you start fighting everything that looks, you know, like, normal to you, because you don't know, can't make sense of whatever's going on. That was pretty cool. I like that element of, like, that I guess medical horror, you can call it. I don't really know. Like, those things are scary too. See, that
human centipede type shit.
But yeah, I think that was pretty cool. And, you know, like, I said, the thing that made it work so well for me when it came to that is, like, it didn't feel like it was in us. We knew that they were in an abandoned hotel, and it was like it could have been a small place or a big place, but it felt like it wasn't condensed to just that, because of how everything was set up and how different it was. Everything was, like, in different sections. I like that it was, like, the basement was all just that booby trap, like, floor that had, like, just the zombified people and the cages, and all the chopped up discarded body parts, because it's like, okay, that's the lowest of the lowest. It's like a metaphor for his method. Here's all the discardable things at the bottom of the trash bin, literally. Mm-hmm. And then as you went up, it became, like, less of a thing. I think he was like, his command station was somewhere where it was, like, really nice, because if you saw it, it was like, oh, this still looks pretty cool here. It looks really, really nice. And he had the lab. He had the rooms with all the mannequins and everything else. It was, like, really cool to have that. The gallery that, like, he had too, right at the entrance, which was so crazy too, because it's like, if anybody could have actually broke in right away through that main entrance, they would have saw that, oh, there's a psychopath here. I do yeah, like that much. It kind of, like, shows you kind of, like, how things happen with Arkin from the first one, and how he was captured, because he had those flashbacks in that moment where he's, like, showing you, like, well, he's telling them, like, this is what you do. And I thought that was, like, so clever. Like I said, like, he cut up his arm and he kept count, in particular through every slit, about how far he had gone, and he was able to find him. If this was a real person, I know they're definitely traumatized for life. Like, that's like such a traumatic thing. And then to have for sure. Like, in order to document what's happening, like, you're mutilating yourself. I think timeline wise, I think when Elena gets captured, it's the night that she goes out to that rave, club dance thing, whatever it was. Then he escapes, he gets picked up by an ambulance, and they have him there, and they're kind of watching him. So it's probably like maybe 12 hours into her kidnapping, because Lucello, who is, I guess, the father's enforcer, I don't really know, that relationship isn't really explained. Like, is the dad a mobster? Is Elena's dad a mobster? Is he a politician? Because he all of a sudden he has access to this, like, you know, this guy who's like, oh, I'm gonna do whatever I can to get your daughter back, and then gonna get mercenaries. So, you know, that was also interesting, mm-hmm. to not have, like, an established understanding of who she was and why. all you knew was like, this is a, you know, you can kind of say this is like a family movie. You know, it's a father showing the love for his, yeah, it's a father showing his love for his daughter, because that's the only thing he has, and him going above and beyond to make sure that she gets returned. You know, it's like Taken, but, you know, like horror. Yeah, no, I think that was like, I like that despite the fact that there was like a team of people who had these skills, they still kind of like, they got their asses killed. Like, it was like, okay. Like, literally right off the beginning, it just like, dead, you know, like, I was, it's like the best way to express and have a metaphor for like, you know, fuck around and find out. Because they were like, you know, let's go in there, we're gonna fuck shit up. And I was like, nope.
Yeah.
You're gonna get picked off one by one. What was my favorite booby traps? What did I like? I really like, it was such a small thing that happened, but I like the fact that like there was a scene where Arkin is trying to go into rooms, and it's like the simplest thing, because that's kind of, if it's really terrifying if you think about it, like he turned the doorknob and like I guess it fell off and it was a knife. Like, you wouldn't expect that. Like, imagine going somewhere and all of a sudden you're like,
yeah,
oh, there's a knife like slicing my hand. Like, how did that happen? So I like the, I think for me, when it comes to like this sort of world, the simpler is better for me, you know. And it's just because like it goes to show like, yeah, you can make all these intricate things, but sometimes like the most basic of stuff will be enough. Like the nail sticking out of the floorboard, that's like very simple, but then it's like they're attached to all these other mechanisms. Like, that itself is torturous. Imagine getting nailed to the floor and you can't pull your feet out because it's gonna make the wound worse.
Yeah, for real, them traps were kind of just different. Like that damn, I don't know how else to call it other than like a meat pounder, when he had all people trapped in a box and the ceiling was just slowly lowering to crush them. I'm like, man, do you know the amount of power that something like that would need to actually like crush humans, like multiple humans? Like, that's insane. But it's like a pretty, it's simple in the grand scheme of like, it's no elaborate aha moment. It's like, nah, it's just the ceiling falling. Y'all gonna get smushed in it unless you can get out this cage somehow. And it doesn't seem to be any way out. This isn't like a game where like, oh, you do this and you live. It's just like, nah, there's no real visible way out. Yeah. So good luck.
That scene in itself, I was with my girlfriend, we were watching it, and we were like, yeah, that's a really fucked up scene. Like, you can't do shit for your friend. Like, her friend was there calling for her, like, help, you know, get me out. And she's like, get up, you have to push up. And it's like, bro, like, that's done. And then it's not even like they got crunched and then you can still tell what they were. Like, they were like smashed completely. Yeah. And it was just like pancake. Like, that's like, oh, that's so messed up. But that entire entry, the beginning of the movie, is like literally like, you know, like you see the severity of how crazy and planned out this guy has everything. Like, they're doing the you know, the meat grinder comes down. That's what I'm gonna call it, the blender, right? It comes down. Not only does it go through everybody once, but it comes back around, which is crazy, because it's like, oh, if you were smart enough to like, you know, like dodge it, it's gonna come back and it's gonna keep going, just back and forth until if you get rescued, yeah. You get rescued. You might be lucky. Who knows? But then it's like they had the scene where the people are trying to run and go to the window, and then like they trip the wires and like the swords swing out of the thing and it just chops them up. That one girl like literally runs into it and like it slices her throat. I did like you know, like how he escapes. Well, the escaping of the collector at the end, like where it's like he uses his own method. Like, oh, he jumped in his own box. They pulled him out and he was able to like run off. So I thought that was cool, because it's like, okay, so this guy has it all planned out. Did you have a favorite trap besides the hydraulic press? I guess I'm gonna call it that.
I guess that's the best way to put it. I kind of like the trap that the girl who like clearly has Stock syndrome was like caught up in. Like, it was just so left field. Like, it was like they didn't show us a good view of the entire room, at least not that I recall beforehand. So for her to just like step somewhere, hits a spike in the ground, and then like a fucking metal box comes up and closes her in like on some Iron Maiden type shit, I was like, oh, that was unexpected. That is like, that's the type of shit you just like, you trigger and you didn't even realize you triggered. And like, that's always the scariest thing. It's one thing to see like a spike wall coming towards you and you're like, damn, I can't move. It's another thing when just like one action leads to like 15, and that's that's kind of what that was, which kind of even tells me like, he, despite her quote unquote he likes me, he clearly did not give her any lay of the land in case they had to trap somebody. It was just like, oh, she'll help me because she's locked into like the quote unquote obsession I have with her. But like, he, the collector, was not exactly entrusting his victims with any information, whether he thought they were on his side or not. So I just found that kind of interesting, because you would have thought the way she screamed at the camera to alert him of exactly where they were, that like she had some understanding of like what the land was kind of like to survive, not to leave, but to just like avoid certain traps in certain rooms. But clearly she did not.
Yeah.
And I thought that trap was pretty dope.
Yeah, I actually really liked that scene too, only because also his response, like, you can tell that it really bothered him, but he never speaks. You know, he doesn't say anything, but you can see how the expression of him, he's very upset. So it's like, what was the point of this woman being here? What was he keeping her for? Like, was there like a weird relationship going on there? Like, I want to see what happens with that. Like a horror dating movie. Like, oh, you know, I'm dating the collector. What is that like? So like that to me was like, huh, that's very interesting. There's the other scene too, which like, I've watched the movie a variety of times, but I always, for some reason, I forget it. But it's the one that sits with me the most because it's very, like, symbolic to, I guess, how his mind works. You know, I believe that someone who was going to take things and push them to their limits and then put them back together and put them on display and be very unbothered by the response of those things has, like, a God complex. So there's that scene in particular when Arkin finds the gallery.
That's a good point.
And the woman is nailed to the wall. That's very, like, you know, it's very religious imagery. And he comes and then he, like, you know, like, slits her throat.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's such a great, like, such a great scene just for that metaphor. I like it for that. Like, he's the maker. He's the one in charge. He's in control. Like, there is no mercy here because he doesn't want to be a merciful God. So it's very cool to have that scene kind of. And just to see, just to show how it was like, you literally, they show you the emphasis of this person, like, nailed to a wall. And you're like, wow, that's a really, really messed up imagery. But that was one of the things I found really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. It's almost like he treats people like projects. Like, you know, you have a bunch of projects around the house you've been meaning to get to. That's like how he treats people. Because it's just people just set up in weird contraptments all around his house. And you're just like, wow, he didn't even like finish them. He just like started and then walked off and like, I got a different toy to play with.
No, yeah, I think that's what also like makes it very interesting too. Like, we don't have an idea of a timeline. So it's like, that lady that was on the wall, how long has she been there? You know, like, if only a certain amount of time has passed between when he caught Elena and now this is happening, were those people fresh? Like, you know, like, you're thinking about it, like, how often was he going out to like do these things, and when did he have time to set all these things up? Because he wasn't the one killing them directly. Like, he was trapping people and setting off all these things that were already like pre-prepared, and then just bringing always back one, you know. And I think it's always interesting with that, because just not even in horror movies, just I think in just general, like, part of like, it's part of popular culture, pop culture in general, like, there's this big fascination for like murderers and like their method. And Jeffrey Dahmer was like, it's like the biggest one because, you know, the documentary that just came out and everything else. So it's like, there's something really messed up about people who have like, you know, they fangirl over people like this. But I do get it to a certain point where it's like the curiosity of like, oh, well, like, what drove them to do this, and like, why they did it, or why did they choose to do this instead of that? So it's always very interesting to see, like, in the realms of like fantasy, how far they can push it. And what people find grotesque and not grotesque, because in the real world, there have been some really messed up people in history who have committed some really, really atrocious things. And people are like, oh, well, like, you know, they try to, like, excuse them. You know, it's always like, make sense. Like, oh, but, like, you know, this happened to them or whatever else. In horror movies, I think what we're allowed to do is, like, you know, you can like something and not feel as guilty. Or not be as judged as badly, because it's like, oh, this is not a real thing. You know, this is make-believe, and like, it's this, or this can never happen. You know, this is never going to happen, or this, nobody can do this. And then you're like, we can't do it yet because nobody's wanted to do it. We haven't thought about doing it, but okay. You guys think what you want to think. I'm going to just sit here and drink my coffee while you guys, you know, romanticize all these psychos. But,
a lot of these directors anyway, they know what characters you can sympathize with and like what angle you need to take to sympathize with these characters, even if they're like the bad guy, quote unquote. And like, I know one example that comes to mind in particular is like, I remember saying this in one of the past episodes about Freddy. It's like, yeah, it's clear Freddy's a pedophile. Like, we all know that. Like, that's a part of the character. And that's part of why he's so creepy, even in his murders, is because the dude touched kids. But even in like, but like, they never try to like,
right,
justify that. Like, they never tried to be like, oh, well, you know, Freddy was just a sad person, so he had to touch kids. Like, they never tried to do that with that character. And I respect that. But the, like, I feel like the best thing they've ever tried to do with the character, like, regarding his backstory, was when they did the remake of the first one, they just kind of made it a little bit more of a, right, like, did he or didn't he type thing. Like, they tried to not justify his actions, but they tried to basically say the town jumped the gun and killed him, but it was never actually proven whether he did it or not. Like, that was the best they ever, like, did with that kind of story. They never tried to justify his behavior. And I thought that was pretty cool. Because, you know, with some characters, there are, like you could say, blurred lines of, like, justification. You know, like, well, Jigsaw, of course, like, with him, my thing with the character, I've always been a fan of the character. It's just, like, John Kramer is a character that's, like, an interesting dude. Dude gets cancer instead of just setting up outright death traps to kill people, which most of them are pretty fucking crazy. He sets up elaborate traps that gives people the chance of living, a slim chance, but it's just like, how badly do you want that chance? Insane. But then, like, just like, you know, in terms of his ideology and all of that stuff, it's like, that's what makes him super appealing to me as a character, is like his ideology behind his stuff and thing. Of course, you could jot all that shit down to him just not having healthcare, yeah, and healthcare system being ass. You could say that, which in a lot of ways totally justified is that. But I think, like, the ideology and stuff like that makes him interesting. So with some characters, it's like, what about them is interesting? I think in the case, honestly, of, like, guys like Ted Bundy and stuff like that people fangirl over, because you do hear about them getting, like, love letters and shit like that when they're in jail. I think some of that is just people. I forgot who said it before. I forgot who I heard say it, but someone said something along the lines of, like, I don't know, some of the people who probably, like, fangirl or fanboy over these characters, these real life figures, almost view them as probably like, they'll be safer in the world if they're close to the monster type of thing. Like, oh, if the monster loves me, I have nothing to fear in this world because the monster's on my side. Some people view it as that. I think some of it is also just like, who's committing the crimes. Like, oh, the person's more attractive than I thought. The person who's killing people looks more attractive than they probably originally thought, and they're just like, wow. Like, that's why Ted Bundy was getting, yeah, away with shit for so long. It was because he was a good looking dude. So, you know, this guy did mad shit, and he was moving in places that he shouldn't even have been able to access, but because of his looks, they were just like, oh man, like, this, I don't really care who the guy is, let the good looking guy through. So yeah, there's always going to be weird complexities when it comes to, like, these type of characters and why people, like, love them, real or fake. Yeah. At least in horror, you can say you're having fun. In real life, real people actually do that, so it's not as
people get upset. Cut and dry. No, yeah, I think that's
not at all
great points to make. Like, we have our character who's obsessed with the collector, and I can see that, you know, the idea of, like, oh, if I'm close to him, then I'm safe, because that's kind of like what she was playing off of. Like, give me a piece to him, let me make sure that I'm on his side, and he knows that I'm willing to risk everything for him and bust it wide open and help him kill these people. But, like, you know, like, the idea of, like, I don't think he was ever, like, careless enough to take his mask off around anybody who he was gonna kill, because that's like the biggest thing about the movie, is like, they don't show you who it is. And I think that's cool too. Like, even at the end of the film, when they figure out who he is in the real world, which to me was like, so I like that too, that it was like done so, like, oh, this is like an average Joe, like, it's like a regular dude, and it plays off of that idea, like, you literally can be in public and you don't know if you walk past the murderer, you know, because it's like, this was a regular dude.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, oh shit, like, is my neighbor who's very Ned Flandery, you know, like, killing kids, you know, in his backyard? We don't know. So it's like, I like that little thing about it. I like the movie opened up seeing what he does and it being unexplained, with, like, the police reports and all other stuff and the news reports and everything. And then I like that it ends on the note where it's, like, him, who he is truly, and then that he kind of, like, if you pay attention enough to it on the radio when he turns it on, they're talking about the crimes that have been committed. Mm-hmm. They talk, oh, well, we haven't seen murders this bad since the gallery murders. It was like the somebody in this museum who like did all this stuff to these people. And then they start talking about, but there was the boy. And then the radio gets switched off. So it's like, oh, so that's the origin story. So then, you know, mm-hmm. it creates a curiosity. Like, what did he see there? You know, like, I think technically what they say is like, you assume that like his father was the man, was the killer. You know, oh yeah, they talk about they talk about it. The father of the family, like pretty much like prepped the family and had them all sitting around the dinner table or whatever else. And he only let the boy live. So this father was a killer. Who, like, I guess taxidermied up the family, which is really sick and twisted. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's a trip. That's a trip. Because man.
Are they finally?
I heard they're supposed to be making a third one. That's what I saw. I saw something that said they're going to possibly make a third one. I saw a possible title called The Collected. I don't know if that was on IMDb, so I don't think it was fan art, but maybe it was. But I sort of heard there's a strong possibility of making a third one now. I don't know how you feel about that as somebody who, like,
definitely more familiar with the franchise than I am. The first one explores his mythology, you know, like just how he does his things and kind of really focuses on one close space and shows you how he does what he does. You know, I'm going to pick this group of people and I'm going to take one. Second one kind of shows what he does with everything afterwards. So if the third one is going to be made, maybe a sequel explaining how it all leads mm-hmm. up to it, because I like the way that it ended. You don't know what happens to him afterwards. You know, like, does this mean that, you know, like, Arkin is going to become, like, he's obsessed with that situation. Yeah, is he going to be the new guy? Or is he going to go around now traveling from city to city to capture other, like, you know, like, kill killers? Because that'd be a great movie. That'd be an awesome movie. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah,
like there was like a guy, collection of like collectors.
Yeah, and then that's like some sort of secret society type who shit. Figured out that, you know, all this is happening, and now he's going to run, knocking them all out, you know, down one by one, getting rid of them. I think that'd be really cool because he was very passionate at the end of everything. He was so upset with him, and I mean, who wouldn't? Especially after seeing all the fucked up shit he did to all those people and how careless and emotionless he was. Even the dogs in this movie, like the poor dogs, man, they didn't even know any better. So yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, I think for me, if there's a sequel, maybe it wouldn't be a sequel, be a prequel, or I want to know what happens to Arkin. Cause I think like there's no way in hell, like he's just going to finish this and leave it as it is because he has to have been messed up. After being in two movies and going through all this crap and seeing all those atrocities, something has to happen to you. You know, like something has to, like, you know, go a little unhinged. Maybe, like I said, maybe he goes around and he starts killing murderers. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what happens. Because technically, it's going to be, it would be him and Elena who would be the only people who survived that killer. So.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know. What do you, I know now that you saw The Collection, you know, you can watch The Collector to kind of get a little bit more of a feel for it. Like, I think you would probably feel this. Maybe you'll feel the same as me. Like maybe a prequel, just to see how that all turned out to be. You know what it is, or like maybe let's see what happens to Arkin. See if he ever gets over his original reason why he started. I don't think I mentioned that, but like he originally he tried to rob the first house in the first movie because of his wife. I think she was in debt, and like, you know, like, can we put her through a trial?
Yeah.
Like what happened? What? It's her fault all of this happened. He wouldn't have to be there. You know, he would have been fine. You know, they would have been okay. Struggling together, but they would have been okay. And even in the second movie, like
yeah, there was the card in the hospital that said "Can't wait to meet the family," which almost seemed like it came from The Collector.
It definitely was a message from him, and that's why he warns her like, "Oh, you had to leave." But even then, it's like, bro, like this is still your fault. You get to go home. Like, go home to your mom and don't tell anybody where you're going. Like, come on, like, this is your fault. I'd be upset. I'd be like, man, I went through all of this, and this is your fault, and you're not even suffering none of the consequences. But,
That's kind of a trip. I just read the synopsis for the first one, and I was like, damn, he going to steal something because his wife is in debt? Like, so usually you hear about the dude who's in trouble, so he gets into even more trouble to try to get out of trouble, but it's the flip side, this side, which is kind of, yeah, because she's not really in the movie much. So it's kind of wild. Not, like, how much was she in the first movie?
And that's it. Like, same thing like the second one. You know, briefly, oh, he has a relationship. They're going through this and that. Well, I'm going to figure it out, baby. You know, and then everything just kind of goes off. That's I think the pace of these movies is what makes them so, like, made you want to watch them because it goes into it. It's not like slow build up. You know, like, I enjoy horror movies. But I can't sit through a movie that's going to be like 4 hours long, 3 hours long. And it's like the first hour is just like establishing everything. Like if you jump into it right away, that's going to keep me hooked. Mm-hmm. I'm going to like watch that thing from like beginning. I'll watch the credits just for the sake of it because that's how interested I am. You know? And I think those, these movies do that. It's like, okay, here we go. You'll hear in the intro credits what's happening. Listen to it, you know, I appreciate the command to the attention to, like, really listen to what's going on in the background while the movie is starting and then, like, at the end. Because it just creates that atmosphere of, like, okay, you're caught up now. Here you go. And I think that's also, like, a big kind of, like, reflection of how the world works. You know, like, we wake up in the morning, we watch the news, or we come home in the evening and we watch the news. And we know that there's all these horrible things happening in the world. And there we can know. But yeah. we don't know how to brace ourselves. We don't know if it's going to happen to us or we're going to get caught up in something crazy when we're just minding our business. So I think that's also something really cool. And that's like where my super really deep appreciation and love for horror movies come from because, you know, we talked about it before, a lot of social commentary. Like horror movies and horror themes are relevant to everyday life. And we don't even realize it. So we sit there and we analyze something. Like, yeah, I really did enjoy this, but why did I enjoy it? You know, what is it about what I was seeing that, like, resonates with me? And I think just a lot of things that happened in the film, I'm like, well, look, for me, it was like, oh, the taxidermy thing is interesting. Let me watch it. And, like, seeing that and then the relevancy it had to Saw and me appreciating that world and for what it is. And then, you know, like, figuring out that there's all these crazy theories to it because, you know, we always want to make more sense into the senselessness of things. And even just like seeing, like,
yep,
trying to imagine ourselves as a character. Like, if I was in that situation, would I help people? Would I put myself at risk for somebody else if I have a freaking contraption attached to my body? You know, so I definitely like the mind play that it creates for you and where it kind of puts you. And you know, it can get a little dark, but I think that's part of it. Like, you have to be able to challenge yourself and be like, am I willing to fall this deep in the well? And respond. I don't know. Like I said, like if you were in a situation like this, when you think about it, would I survive? I don't know. Hopefully I'm never in a situation to have to figure that out. You know, like hopefully it's not like I end up on on a subway train and some crazy mechanism starts going off, you know, and that's terrifying.
I know, right? That's like the beginning or something. They're like, oh God, it's happening again. I'm like, again?
So And I like reading the theories about how this is somebody that, like, survived the Jigsaw trials. You know, like, oh, well, this could be, what's her name, Amanda, who became the pig, or it can be so-and-so. So kind of, like, would be, like, I guess people who were, like, protégés to John Kramer, and then they took it somewhere else. It does have that vibe, like, where it's, like, similar methods, similar, like, lore. But I think in part that just has to do with what it was supposed to be originally. I do like that it doesn't, like, take away from what... They didn't use the original direction they wanted for it, where it's supposed to be the origins of John Kramer. I like that it's his... Yeah, I like that it's his own thing.
Yeah, I'm happy it's not that.
You know, it was changed to a way where it created its own kind of, like, you know, like, world for itself. Even though it is... I'm not going to say it's a ripoff or anything like that of the Saw franchise because, I believe it's the same people. But that it's like, feels like it's similar. Like, in this world that exists there, and that version of the Earth, I guess you can say, that's what murderers do. They booby trap things and, like, you go through trials and if you survive, you survive. If you don't, you don't. So I think that's pretty cool. And you know what would be a great sequel? Let's make them face off. If that's where you were going, John Kramer versus the collector, and see what happens. That'd be an amazing movie. Why has that happened before? I don't even know. I haven't seen every movie in the world, but, like, has a murderer fought a murderer? You know, we've had, you know, like, yeah, but we've
not that I can recall. I know there's Freddy versus Jason. There's, in I think Japanese culture, they have the Grudge monster versus the girl from the ring. But I don't think they've done like yeah, human
so
killers.
That'd be really interesting thing to see, because then it's like, here are these two very similar people, but they're both driven by very different things. Which one of those would eventually become sort of like a protagonist that's going to try to save other people? Because that's kind of like what we had in Freddy versus Jason. You know, Jason's kind of like helped, so then he ends up kind of like helping them out. So like, will we have John Kramer grow a consciousness and redeem his soul and try to rescue people because he realizes that it's horrible what's happening? Or is the Collector going to cave in and be like, I can save people? I don't know. That'd be a really interesting thing to see. I always like stuff like that. Like, you know.
Yeah, I'm always a fan of Versus movies too. It'd be interesting to see the type of plot that would come up, something like that. Because definitely, I would say this dude, the Collector, is a lot more physically capable than John is. Could you say he kind of took down like the intruders? Like, I was like, hold up, damn, like, who the fuck trained him? Like, that's the it's like, this dude used to be in the military or something. Like, he's fucking these guys up. Like, I don't know if it was like training or if it was just him being familiar with the environment, because he just dismantled them so quickly. I was like, damn, okay, like, this dude is like clearly capable. You know, John had to rely on his traps and shit like that, or hopefully someone else do anything like physically. So I don't know, that could be something. I think it is kind of cool that this kind of sprouted out of like people thinking maybe they could do a prequel, but then they kind of turned into their own thing, because the Saw franchise itself did in a lot of ways several prequels or backstories to John and explain like the reasoning for a lot of things. So it's kind of cool that they made something else of it.
I love that. You just put it perfectly. I would love to see this. If they were to ever like make them confront each other, it would be a brain versus brawn sort of situation. Like, one of them is more physically capable, the other one's a little mind games. How does that like work? I think that'd be really cool. And you're right. The Collector was very prepared for him to just be like a regular guy, because even when he did the hand to hand combat, it was very specific, very well trained. He was very capable with a knife.
Yeah.
You know, like, even, oh, he's a sniper too. Like, I was like, you saw him at one point when they got the alert of the homeless guys after the homeless guys got shot and the cops showed up. He had a whole sniper rifle and everything. And he was like, you know, and that's, I mean, that can kind of go into the correlation of like people who sometimes with taxidermy are people who go hunting. So like, they preserve and do mounting, like, you know, especially in like in the South and like other states that allow for you to do like hunting legally and stuff like that. Like, a lot of, some people, they do that. That's like part of why they hunt. Like, yeah, oh, I'm gonna go kill this buck and I'm gonna like mount the buck's head on a plaque and sell it to somebody for money. So that might be the correlation. But he was in a city. It doesn't really seem like it was like in the countryside to allow for him to have room for that. So it's very interesting that there's all these,
yeah, it's a good point. Because he definitely took the rifle after he dispatched him. He took the rifle, but I mean, like, you wouldn't, in my mind, you would only take it if you felt capable of using it, which is like, what type of training are you doing outside of taxidermy to feel like comfortable with a rifle?
It kind of makes you think about like, what is this person at their full capacity? Like, you know, like, based off of how he moves and how he was being, like, I would assume that he was like a cop or something that went rogue, or like a military person who was off the edge, you know, something crazy, but like,
yeah, something.
Not like, oh, here's this, he was literally a bug nerd at the end of the movie. You're like, wow, you're just a guy who does bug stuff. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's definitely.
So, man, before we hop up out of here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. You had a good time talking about this. Any more last words about the movie?
Definitely, like, we hop out watch here? The collection. Watch The Collector. Watch The Collection. It's a ride for sure. Definitely enjoyable. Makes you think about the average guy and what they can do, honestly. And it's enjoyable. I have nothing bad to say about it, so I definitely watch it.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna check out the first one. This one was pretty interesting, so I'm kind of curious to put the full puzzle together in my mind from watching the first one. Oh, so
thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Hopefully,
man, I really appreciate it.
We have a good time with our exhibition. I believe this episode is going to show in November, correct?
Yep. Yep. Right around there.
I guess you can edit what I asked you. And so Memento is going to be opening on November 3rd. If you get a chance, please check it out. We definitely have our lovely podcast friends here in the show. And we hope that you, well, I hope that you can take part of it and check it out. If not, we'll post it on social media for everybody to enjoy.
Nice. And we'll drop it in the show notes and post it online so people can see more about it. So awesome, man. Well, thanks for coming. And thank you for listening. Until next time, ooh, goes goodbye.